Hey Up First listeners, it's A. Martinez. There's one word that keeps cropping up in business headlines lately: inflation. Economists have been watching the price of consumer goods climb pretty quickly in recent months. Some of these economists, including those in the Biden administration, say it's fine, yes, we're seeing higher prices, but there's bound to be some temporary flux as we try to get back to business as usual. It'll slow down. Other experts are warning this could accelerate and really damage the U.S. economy in the long run. Stacey Vanek Smith and Darian Woods are with NPR's daily business podcast, The Indicator, from Planet Money, and they wanted to find out just how we know whether inflation is happening or not. And it turns out it takes a small army of people. Here's the show.
Inflation. It is a huge concern about the economy right now. Inflation is just a fancy name for prices going up. And if prices start going up at a really fast pace, it can signal the beginning of a so-called inflationary spiral. That means prices going up out of control. So like your latte goes from $4 to $10 to $50. That can cause enormous destruction to an economy and, of course, to the savings of millions and millions of people.
It's one of the most important indicators for any economy. It's measured using something called the Consumer Price Index, the CPI. It's a measure of the price of everything we buy. And it just came out today.
Yes, it did. And it caused kind of a splash. So the rate of inflation as of the beginning of June was 5.4%, meaning consumer prices were up 5.4% in May compared to the year before. That is the fastest prices have risen since 2008. Of course, economists are quick to point out that June of last year was a really brutal time for the economy, so prices might have been a little bit lower than normal. But the CPI has a lot of people worried and wondering how policy will be affected by this news. But how did we come to get this news, actually? How is that number measured? That 5.4%, where does it come from?
The process is meticulous, labor-intensive, and it involves hundreds of people. It's also top secret. This data is closely guarded because it needs to be above suspicion and tampering. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics agreed to let us tag along for half a day.
Yes, they did. All I had to do was sign like 8 non-disclosure agreements. But totally worth it.
We got into the belly of the beast, the inflation machine. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Today on the show, the inflation watchers. We go under the hood of the CPI and see how the government determines whether inflation is happening.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Calm, committed to helping you kickstart your mental well-being initiatives. Empower your employees to stress less, rest better, and build resilience year-round. With Calm for Business, companies can partner with the mental fitness app to provide support and tools for their employees. Right now, Calm is offering a free well-being ebook for HR and benefit leaders, and 1 month free after you attend a free demo when you go to calm.com/upfirst.
To get the inflation number every month, millions of data points are involved, gathered by around 450 dedicated workers.
Hi, my name is Emily Masitis, and I am an economist with the United States Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Every month, Emily and her colleagues go on a hunt. A hunt for inflation. To do this, they track the price of, well, just about everything. Rent, haircuts, trucks, toasters, raincoats, boxes of wine, burgers to go, weddings, funerals, yoga pants.
And my favorite saying is, we follow prices on pretty much everything that is legal in the country.
So. This is a huge job. And it starts with surveys taken by thousands of households. Just everyday people all across the country who write down in really minute detail how they spend their money.
Yeah, so they'll write down something like, you know, I bought butter at the store. And then inflation watchers like Emily will find, you know, a particular brand of butter at a particular store, and they will track the price of it for years.
Everything has a code. Salted butter has one code. Unsalted butter has a different code. Butter in sticks, different code. Organic butter, that's also different. And this is true for every consumer product in the US.
We have a 600-page manual for a reason.
Really? It's 600 pages? Have you read it?
There is a lot. I have.
Really? Every page?
There is a lot to learn. I have. Yep.
Wow. To check these prices, trackers like Emily used to drive around to stores, find a particular tub of unsalted butter or a 100% wool boat neck sweater in size 8, and look at the price tag for that particular item. And then come back to that store to look at that same item month after month, which sounds really kind of old school and needlessly labor-intensive, but this data is just that important. It has to be accurate.
Of course, COVID changed everything. In-person was no longer an option. So now, instead of walking into stores and checking price tags, now Emily's day is a lot of this.
Mr. Hart, this is Emily Masaitis calling with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. How are you doing today?
Hi. Good.
Phone calls, dozens a day. First up, a sporting goods store in Delaware.
So we are just doing the Consumer Price Index update on our pair of socks.
Socks. Of course, Darian, I cannot reveal the brand of socks because I signed a non-disclosure agreement. It's confidential. But these are white athletic socks. Of course, they are not just any white athletic socks, though.
Just verifying some specifics on the item. It's knee length. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then I have that it is 85% acrylic and 15% nylon.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And I have that it has moisture wicking. Is that correct?
Yeah, repels moisture.
Okay, great.
Emily makes a note of all of this. She gets to the right code. And now the moment is here. The price.
Okay. So they're $7.99.
$7.99 for the socks. Turns out the price hasn't changed since last month.
So the sock indicator, Darian, telling us inflation isn't happening. But that is just one product in one store. And you cannot measure inflation using just one pair of socks. And Emily has at least 30 more price checks ahead of her today.
And it's not just products like socks. The Consumer Price Index tracks services, too. Haircuts, car repair, workout classes.
Daycare. In this case, the weekly rate for a 2-year-old at a daycare in Philadelphia.
For this one, Emily checks the price on the daycare's website. She does a lot of that these days.
So I have older toddler here, and the weekly full-time tuition is $320. That changed $306. So inflation in action.
Inflation in action. The price of daycare is up 5%, about $14 a week. And that adds up. It's around $700 a year.
So there it is. We've seen some evidence of the dreaded inflation.
Yes. As you can imagine, Darian, I got very worked up about this. I was like, here it is, inflation in the flesh. And Emily was like, okay, like, let's look at a few more prices. Let's make some more calls. So she let me tag along to a couple more phone calls, including to a little corner store in Philadelphia to check the price of butter.
It's butter. It's not that exciting.
What?
We will be the judge of that.
I am just calling to do our monthly check on butter for the Consumer Price Index.
Specifically, a box of 4 sticks, unsalted.
$4.35. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so that's gone up 25%. It looks like the last time it was $3.49. Do you happen to know why it's increased so much?
See? Butter is exciting. But Emily gets very focused here because this is potentially a really big moment in the inflation hunt. A price rising by that much actually requires filling out a special form. I mean, it could be evidence of spiraling inflation.
But Emily's been doing this for years and her spidey sense is going off. So before she fills out that special form, she asks the store owner to double check the price of that butter.
The store owner puts the phone down. We wait for a minute. Comes back on.
Okay, so it's not $4.35 right now?
No, it's $2.50.
So it turns out he was looking at the wrong brand of butter. And in fact, the particular butter Emily's been tracking is part of a promotion this week, 2 for $5. So one package costs $2.50, which is actually less than it cost last month.
Okay. That's what I was saying. We're like, that's a huge increase for butter, huh? You can stack up on it. I'm glad you took the time to look that up for me. That I appreciate it.
This is why it's so important to be so precise. All of the details matter. That 5.4% inflation rate we saw this morning that pushed markets down, that has policymakers issuing statements and the price of gold rising, that number comes down to this. A woman calling a supermarket in Philadelphia to check the price of butter. And then double checking to make sure the data is right. This episode of The Indicator was produced by Julia Ritchie with help from Gilly Moon. It was fact-checked by Michael Ha. The Indicator's edited by Kate Concannon and is a production of NPR.
That's Stacey Vanek Smith and Darian Woods from NPR's daily business podcast, The Indicator from Planet Money. We'll be back after the break.
The following message comes from VMware. What happens when we welcome change? We can make emergency medicine possible at 40,000 feet. We can harness the energy of the tiny electron. We can create new ways to connect, rethinking how we communicate to be more inclusive than ever. With app, cloud, security, and workspace solutions, VMware helps companies navigate change faster. To learn more, visit vmware.com/welcome. VMware, welcome change.
Before the break, we talked about how we measure inflation in the way we normally think of it, the price of stuff rising. But there are other ways it pops up that are harder to spot. Stacey Vanek Smith and Planet Money's Greg Rosalsky looked into the phenomenon known as shrinkflation.
A couple weeks ago, Edgar Dworsky walked into a Stop & Shop grocery store in Somerville, Massachusetts, like he was a detective entering a crime scene.
I looked in the cereal aisle.
Edgar searched the aisle, hoping to find the smoking gun, but he was too late. The store had already replaced old General Mills cereal boxes with newer ones.
So I was a little down. So I started walking around the store, and then lo and behold, there's an end dial display of some General Mills cereals.
So he grabbed an old box of Cocoa Puffs, and he put it side by side with a new box of Cocoa Puffs.
The tip Edgar had received was right on the money. General Mills had downsized the content of their family-sized boxes from 19.3 ounces to 18.1 ounces.
I actually took them up to the scanner, and they were all on sale for the same price. They all rang the same, even though they were different sizes.
Edgar is a former Massachusetts Assistant Attorney General and a longtime consumer advocate. He has spent decades tracking these crimes.
Which is why when he discovered the tip he had received was true, that General Mills had in fact shrunk its family-sized boxes of cereal, he wasn't so surprised. It was just one more open and shut case of shrinkflation.
Shrinkflation?
Shrinkflation. It's when companies shrink the size of their products while charging the same price or even more. Lately, it seems there's a whole bunch of companies doing it. This is The Indicator from Planet Money, and we're on the case. I'm Greg Rosalsky.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Today on the show, we investigate shrinkflation, inflation's subtler, smaller cousin. So we've been hearing a lot about inflation lately. Inflation, of course, is when the price of things goes up.
Stacey, inflation is totally old news. Like, we're here to talk about shrinkflation. That's when the price stays the same, but the size of products goes down. Edgar Dworsky, he spent decades finding evidence of it. His garage has become like an evidence locker of the shrinkflation police department.
I have the original 16-ounce Maxwell House coffee can in the garage, the original Tropicana 64-ounce carton of orange juice.
You know, orange juice, tuna cans, peanut butter jars, cereal boxes, butter, everything you can think of has gotten smaller.
But it got to a point where I was running out of space to warehouse them.
So, of course, the U.S. has a reputation for super-sized products. Like, we are known for all things giant, right? Still, Edgar's garage makes it clear that we used to be a lot more super-sized.
The term shrinkflation is actually somewhat new. It was coined by the economist Pippa Malmgren about a decade ago, but Edgar actually prefers referring to the practice by, like, an older name, downsizing. It means the same thing, and it's probably as old as mass consumerism.
Well, there's an old story, and I don't know if it's true or not, that downsizing began in the days of nickel candy vending machines. that apparently the price of chocolate was going up, and the manufacturers notified the vending machine companies, you know, we have to charge more. And the vending machine folks said, well, wait a minute, how is that going to work in our machines? So someone came up with a brilliant idea. Oh, let's make the candy bars a little bit smaller so the vending machine people could still charge a nickel.
Edgar says the companies tend to resort to shrinkflation for the same reason that they resort to inflation, which is when they have to deal with rising business costs.
Because consumers are not net weight conscious. They're price conscious, but not net weight conscious.
So it's like stealth inflation, basically.
Right. Basically, you're paying more. The product is going to run out sooner. It is a sneaky way to pass on a price increase.
So if consumers were like the rational creatures depicted in, you know, classic economic theory, we wouldn't be tricked by shrinkflation.
Right, we'd be all about the net weight.
We would keep our eyes on the price per Cocoa Puff. We wouldn't fall for gimmicks and how companies package those Cocoa Puffs.
But of course, you know, research shows that consumers are a lot more gullible than classic theory might assume. They are more sensitive to changes in the price of a product than they are to the quantity of the product they're buying. So when companies have to deal with rising business costs, shrinkflation becomes a really attractive option.
Which is why when America started seeing surges in like the price of everything from gasoline to food, Edgar was on the lookout for inflation's devious cousin. And we're now actually seeing that. We're seeing this wave of shrinkflation. From Tillamook ice cream to Royal Canin cat food.
So a lot of consumers are pretty oblivious to shrinkflation, but many consumers are not. And some people get very, very into this. In fact, there's a whole thread on the website Reddit that is just dedicated to shrinkflation. It is like full of photos of smaller packages and net weights. And it is, of course, fueled by outrage and annoyance of like movie theaters shrinking the size of their popcorn, pizza places shrinking the size of their pizzas. Recently, of course, Greg, there was a post about the downsizing of General Mills cereal.
So the company announced last week that the rising cost of ingredients and packaging and labor and trucking and all of the intricate, you know, symphony that it takes for you to get your Cocoa Puffs, that rising cost was forcing them to revamp their business. So we reached out to General Mills about reports that they're downsizing their cereals as part of this strategy. So they provided us with this statement. The change, they say, is all about creating consistency and standardization across the cereal products. This, they say, quote, allows more efficient truck loading, leading to fewer trucks on the road and fewer gallons of fuel used, which is important in both reducing global emissions as well as offsetting increased costs associated with inflation, end quote.
So they're saying that making smaller boxes of Cocoa Puffs is better for the planet?
You know what? I'm not here to judge them, but maybe Edgar is.
Well, it sounds like PR speak. This one is kind of a novel explanation, if you will, that they're saving gas because they can pack more boxes, you know, into trucks. What they're not accounting for is the product is going to run out sooner. That means the consumer has to make another trip to the supermarket sooner than they anticipated.
To be fair to General Mills, like a lot of companies these days, they are dealing with increased business costs, you know, higher gas, higher cost of grain, and, you know, shrinkflation is just their way of dealing with it.
And a lot of companies are responding in kind of a similar way. A spokesperson for Charmin, for example, was confronted by reporters at WBUR about the shrinking size of their toilet sheet squares and suggested that it was the result of innovations that basically allow customers to more efficiently wipe their behinds. Apparently, we're just getting better at using toilet paper, so we don't need as much of it, Greg.
Keep it classy, Stacey. If this keeps up, though, I'm like imagining this like Lilliputian dystopia where we're like all forced to like eat miniature candy bars and drink tiny drinks and wipe our bottoms with teeny tiny squares of paper. But hopefully not. You know, like maybe consumers will actually kind of wake up to all this and voice concern, and the power of consumer demand will force companies to listen and upsize their products. But until then, our prayers are with the lovers of Cocoa Puffs.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Brittany Cronin with help from Gilly Moon. It was fact-checked by Michael Ha. The Indicator's edited by Kate Concannon and is a production of NPR.
That was The Indicator from Planet Money, one slice of the economy explained every day in 10 minutes or less. I'm Amy Martinez. This is Up First, and we'll be back tomorrow with all the news you need to know.
Investigations into police use of force and misconduct were secret in California until now. We've sifted through hours of interrogation tape to find out who does the system of police accountability really serve and who does it protect. Listen now to every episode of the new podcast, On Our Watch, from NPR and KQED.